welcome to Season 4, Episode 58 of Mancy, a podcast about magic and how it has influenced our culture. In each set of episodes, we cover a different Mancy or method of magic. And after a bit of a hiatus, we are back with the next season. I'm RJ Walker. I'm a spoken word poet and writer. With me is my co-host, Elle.
I'm Elle Alder, a professional psychic and solitary eclectic witch.
Humans are sentimental creatures. We assign emotional meaning to objects and places to help us remember and to help us share those memories. Sometimes the memories we attach to objects are painful, sometimes they are romantic or hopeful. We may not always be able to control our circumstances, but we can control how we feel about those circumstances and how we compartmentalize those feelings. One of the ways that we exert that control is to assign meaning to objects. Some might find it cathartic to toss their ex-lover's old shirt into a campfire. Obviously, it would be much more practical to donate it to a thrift store or a secondhand shop. But the act of destroying that object and watching it dissolve into nothing works to destroy those feelings as well.
I mean, I had a ring from my abuser. It was a whole thing. And I threw it in a river. And, you know, I felt a lot better giving that to Oshun than I did carrying it. So, you know.
There are also items where the opposite is true. No matter how much something becomes raggedy or deteriorated, a person can't bring themselves to throw it away or destroy it because of the memories associated with it.
That's my Namaste Bitches sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, forever.
That's my Spider-Man Fatang.
I hate that shirt. The collar is half detached from it.
I'll tell you the story of that later. Maybe that'll be a bonus for the Patreon. While I don't really believe in God or magic, I am a deeply sentimental person. Elle, what about you? Are you sentimental?
I'm a poet. Yeah, and a witch. I mean, literally, one of my friends slash person who used to work for me slash listener, like, came over and was in my room. And my altar is actually just all around my room, and it's like my desk and then, you know, the book the shelves that I have and then the bookshelf in my room. Mm-hmm. All of that is my altar, and it is all just shit that people have given me over the years, including like the haunted cursed water can that's on my shelf, like unopened. And I'm like, that's my cursed water.
Wow.
Yeah. That's, so I always hold on to
that's
stuff.
From Liquid Death's first batch of cursed water.
Yeah, I still have it. I'm never going to drink it. It's just always going to be cursed water. Maybe someday if I really need to put like the stank on someone, I will use it in a curse for someone else.
Certain objects, though, can cross the threshold beyond sentimentality and into the realm of magic and spirituality. Objects that ward off curses or cause them. Objects that are lucky or unlucky. We've talked about a few of these objects before on the show. The Nazar, or evil eye, is a symbol meant to ward off evil and is often found on amulets and jewelry. And Elle just picked one up.
Yeah.
To get the
stank off of our house.
The greasy neighbor that complains about everything. HOAs are a scam. That's my opinion.
They are, but it's okay because we don't have to mow the lawn.
Fuck a lawn is what I say.
I'm beginning to agree with you more and more. I mean, I don't really want to be here. Dear listeners, if you have a really cheap apartment that you want to rent to RJ and I, we'd be down for that.
Yeah.
I think we should just have our listeners host us and we'll just be like, all right, we're just going to travel for a minute, you know?
I've done that. It's rough living.
We have an RV.
Yeah. We've also discussed haunted paintings and cursed mirrors.
God, the fucking boy crying painting, that's fucking haunted in and of itself. Without the, like, surviving fires, it was haunted.
In this episode, though, we're going to explore the role of non-specific magical objects. That is, an object that's purpose has changed from practical to magical. We are going to be talking about charms.
Lucky Charms are a global phenomenon. The cereal and the concept.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certain our listeners have some kind of lucky charm or have had one at some point in their lives. An object designed to channel and inspire hope. Elle, do you have a lucky charm?
I have several. I have a whole bunch.
I'm sure you have many, but do you have like a particular one that's like, this is Elle's lucky charm and it won't work for anyone else?
So actually, over the weekend, John, we were like on a vacation back to where we went to college in Laramie, and we went down to Denver to this store called Ritual Craft, which is just like this really great magical store outside of Denver. They have a really, really aesthetic Instagram that everyone should follow, and it's craft with a V, like C-R-A-V-T.
Craft.
Craft, like the old way of spelling it. Anyway, they had an altar for Santa Muerte, and which we've talked about on our queer magic episode, as well as like throughout different kinds of like folk magic, Mexican folk magic. So I was like leaving her an offering for reasons and stuff. And I pulled out, I actually carry with me in my purse several different charms, but I have in particular an antique key that I have anointed with road opener oil. And so it's like whenever I like reach an obstacle where there's like a barrier, the idea is that the key opens it and it has road opening oil on it so that it's like constantly like allowing opportunities to come in is the idea of it. So I like pulled it out to leave it for Santa Muerte, and she was like, no, like, why don't you take that? You need that. That's for you. You keep that. Bring me back this other thing. So she like told me other things to bring back to her. So I'm not sure that I have ever really equated them. Often I will take like the charms that I have or the things that I've collected and like leave them as offerings, leave them in sacred spaces, that kind of stuff. That's the first time I've ever tried to leave an offering that is like a very specific like magical item of mine that was rejected.
A key is actually a Lucky Charms marshmallow.
Yeah.
And they had magic doors where the keyhole would disappear after you poured the milk on it, so the door opens to you.
Ooh, yeah,
and the
see?
Marshmallow cereal.
That's what it is, but it's my antique key.
Lucky Charms, far more occult than it seems.
I mean, it is, like, Irish, you know, like, based on Irish stuff, which is very occult before the Christians.
So, I actually had a really strange experience a few weeks ago, and it appears that I have received a lucky key as
yeah.
well. Or maybe it's cursed, I don't know. So, this was like finals week at school. I park my car. I park at a public park
mm-hmm.
instead of parking on campus because it's like
$500
and there's
yeah.
never parking spots.
Yeah.
So I park at this like public park and I just take my scooter in, and I was sitting in my car just like watching TikToks because I was a little early, and I hear this like ka-clank noise
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, what the fuck was that? And then I see like a magpie like hops off of the roof of my car and onto my hood, looks at me, and then flies up into one of the trees. And when I got out of my car, mm-hmm. I found a bent like house key on top of my car. Like the magpie brought me this fucking
yeah.
key. And I was like, well, this is like a super haunted moment.
Yeah.
Especially after like we did that whole thing about the one for sorrow, two
yeah.
for mirth bullshit.
One magpie brings you a key, opening it to sorrow, opening your life to sorrow. You could read it that way.
Anyway, yeah, it's super haunted, super spooky. I texted Elle, and Elle told me that it was a powerful magic artifact.
To hold on to.
Yeah, to hold on to. So that I can open the door to my sorrows, I guess. I don't know.
At this point, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I have a powerful magical artifact. Don't fuck with me.
I mean, truly, like, if that happened to me, that is something I would never get rid of. I would be like, I don't know what I need this for, but very clearly I have been chosen for something with this. If you've ever been given a key by a magpie, keep that shit. Don't tell if you have like a magical mambo or like a practitioner or someone that you go to, don't fucking tell them that that's how you got it, because they'll want it, because that shit's definitely magic. Like straight up, RJ was like, what do I do with this? And I was like, keep it or I will take it from you. Like I will just assimilate that into my magical stuff. So
that said, if any
toot-toot.
If any magical people want to purchase it, This may be a key that opens up the door to me getting money for the key.
I think we should put $1,000. You know what? How about this? If someone's like, I want that fucking key, I will personally anoint it with road opener oil. And I will, like, make it very magical. And, yeah, we should charge, like, $500 for it, $500 and $1,000.
$500, I would feel bad charging that much.
But what about my magic? Magpie magic and mine? I don't even offer spells. I don't even do spells for people. It's not even something I take money for.
I don't know.
I'm just saying.
I don't know. I will say that if you want to, like, subsidize, like, a tour or an art project that I'm working on, that, like, this is a way to do it. Yeah.
We'll see. DM us, Mancy Pod,
DM
on Instagram.
Us, wealthy, magical people, DM me. Because charms often have unique importance to the holder, the history of charms can be difficult to pin down. There are a few, like, culturally significant charms, like a specific type of object is always considered a charm. There are also notable individuals who have had lucky charms. And finally, there's a certain magically delicious breakfast cereal that I would like to address.
They're magically delicious.
Magically delicious.
Thank you.
There is a fairly modern divination practice known as charm casting or charm throwing. Essentially, a bunch of random junk drawer trinkets are collected and then thrown in a box or onto, like, a divination cloth. And where they land and the positions that they land on determines the reading. While casting or throwing is not particularly new, it's one of the oldest forms. I mean, see astrogalomancy in our last episode. Throwing charms is a fairly recent phenomenon. People in ancient times didn't just have random junk and clutter like we have today. Everything was handmade.
Yeah.
You put hours into making
it
stuff.
It mattered, yeah.
Right? You didn't just have piles of, like,
garbage.
Like boondoggle and beads and keychains and polished rocks and stuff. Or board game pieces, or whatever random clutter that the caster has collected. I've asked a charm caster on TikTok to do a guest reading, but I'll also have Elle do a reading.
Mm-hmm.
And Elle is also going to do a reading using Lucky Charms cereal
in the
final episode of charm casting. So first, let's start with some of the more obvious Lucky Charms, the ones that are just kind of, like, universally accepted as being lucky. Often these charms are handmade or found in nature. First, let's talk about the lucky rabbit's foot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with these. It's the foot of a rabbit mounted on a piece of wood or metal that usually has a loop so it can be affixed to clothing or bags or whatever. The lucky rabbit's foot is one of those things that is actually cross-cultural, found in North America, South America, Europe, and China. Each has their own lore attached to it, though. In North America, the lucky rabbit's foot practice likely originated from hoodoo, a spiritual belief system that was formed by enslaved Africans and concealed from those who kept them in bondage. Hoodoo is a closed practice religion for that reason. Elle is quite familiar with the practice and will let me know if I say something I shouldn't so I can cut it out of the episode.
To clarify, I specifically did, like, what I practiced was Haitian voodoo, heavy in Santeria and working with the saints, using root work. Hoodoo, very specifically, is mostly the folk religion that America has maintained from ancestors coming over from Haiti and the Dominican Republic and then, like, being assimilated. And so it is still, like, of the African, like, descent, but it is kind of a different flavor that's more Americanized than, like, Santeria or voodoo are. So just to clarify, yes, I know about it. I am not trained and have not practiced actual voodoo.
Hoodoo.
Yeah, that one. Sorry. Yeah. Jesus.
When I discuss the North American belief in the lucky rabbit's foot, I'll mostly be focusing on publicly released stories involving it, because this is one of those practices that originally started with hoodoo but was, like, widely appropriated, and that's why you even know about it.
Yeah. So many things. So many wonderful things have just been stolen from voodoo and hoodoo, and we're like, oh, those things are terrible, but let me take this part of it. That's called appropriation.
Yeah, and then say that it's ours.
Yeah.
First, there are certain conditions that must be met for the rabbit's foot to be considered lucky or magical. What those conditions are varies wildly. And there probably are some real conditions that are not precisely or largely known.
I would think that just killing the rabbit to take the foot would not be one of those conditions under which it would be lucky.
Well, some say that the rabbit must be killed under a full moon. Others, a new moon.
Okay.
Others that the rabbit must be killed in a graveyard, or that the rabbit must be killed with a silver bullet, or on any rainy Friday, or specifically Friday the 13th, or that the rabbit must still be alive when its foot is taken. In any case, specific shit has to happen for the rabbit's foot to be magic.
Okay.
As is typical with things that have magic.
And I would say that all of the things that you just mentioned would put a very specific kind of magic into the charm. And so it could be based on what the intention is with the rabbit foot that would determine, like, what conditions you would follow to obtain it.
There is a blues song by Blind Lemon Johnson called Rabbit Foot Blues that offers some insight into the tradition. The belief in these amputated rabbit's feet would, of course, be appropriated by white Americans, largely because a lot of this was communicated through the blues, which people had access to, and then they would just kind of, like, interpret without truly knowing, and then it would be appropriated. And the first people to kind of like appropriate this were people who were the white people who were around like African Americans, poor white people, and people whose professions were deadly or relied on luck, outsider white people, outlaws, gamblers. There are European folk traditions that involve receiving luck from criminals that have been condemned.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly a charm called the Hand of Glory, which I will talk about shortly. In any case, if you were to take a rabbit's foot from the corpse of a criminal or from a criminal who has died or won it in a bet from a criminal, even if the rabbit was associated like as a pet, a relative of the criminal or on the criminal's grave, it would increase the power of the rabbit foot significantly.
Okay.
The more wicked the criminal, the more powerful the boost the charm would get. According to... I know.
Why? Why is that where you want to source your magic as though that's somewhere good?
So one of my favorite things is there's a humorist. I forget what his name is. But he said, you can have a lucky rabbit's foot, but remember that it did not work for the rabbit.
Yeah,
Anyway, folklorist Newbell Niels Puckett wrote about this, said that 22nd President Grover Cleveland was said to have received a particularly powerful lucky rabbit's foot on the campaign trail. The rabbit that lost its foot was found on the grave of notorious outlaw Jesse James. Cleveland would go on to win his bid for the presidency.
Hmm.
And some people were like, the rabbit foot worked. It's the fucking rabbit foot. The lucky rabbit foot would make its way into minstrel shows and minstrel songs.
I know.
This is where it gets bad.
This is specifically where they're like, oh, this is a hoodoo thing that now we're going to exploit.
Like, if it was just, like, poor white people who were, like, in these communities.
Well, and I think that that's something that can get really confusing for people, that, like, a lot of times, like, marginalized white people are impoverished people that also live around a lot of POC. And so then, like, what they grow up with, what they know to be true is, like, very much part of that culture. But then they're like, well, this belongs to me, without understanding that it actually is something that you've derived from the culture that you've grown up in and is not something that inherently belongs to you. And then we start seeing, like, other white people take those things from, like, poor white people and exploiting them. And so it just is, like, this really gross, like, way of, like, stealing from marginalized people in a way that is basically, like, camouflaged because of marginalization in a different way. Minstrel shows were bad.
Yeah, and if you don't know, they're the deeply racist theater tradition that still haunts the U.S. today.
Mm-hmm.
Minstrel shows were responsible for the deeply ingrained racism that exists in the arts and culture of the U.S.
Yeah.
While African Americans were reinventing their culture after being robbed of it for generations, minstrel shows were designed to mock and tear down these newfound black traditions.
Mm-hmm.
This is the main vehicle for how the folklore of the lucky rabbit's foot spread into white spaces. Today, rabbit's feet are kitschy crafts sold in curio shops, Typically, they're made out of synthetic materials and dyed bright colors. Only a select few rabbits' feet are acquired through traditional means, and the ones that are typically come with a warranty describing how they were acquired to guarantee its authenticity as a magic item.
I don't know that I've ever seen one, like a real, real one.
I did. When I was in Boy Scouts, they had it at the trading post. They had a real one that came with a warranty describing
how did they get it?
Full moon.
Whoa, at Boy Scout camp in Utah?
Full moon, yeah.
Whoa, that's like, I was sitting over here like, okay, ritual craft has like a large amount of like specimens from animal, both wet and dry. And so I bet like at a space like that, and they're very like informative as well as supportive of like Santeria, specifically in Denver. There's like a very large population of people who practice Santeria there. And so that would be somewhere that you could probably get it. And even there, they didn't have it. But at fucking Mormon Boy Scout camp.
I think a lot of that is because of how it was appropriated and how it has very much become this so connected to white supremacy that it exists in these predominantly white spaces like Mormon Boy Scout camp. And Mormons themselves are very, very superstitious and very, very receptive to like folk traditions and like folk magic ideas.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't think so. You'd think that they'd be like evangelicals where like literally everything is witchcraft. But no, kind of the opposite.
Well, I think also when we start looking at like Mormons are primed for magic, like everything about their religion is based off of different kinds of magical practices. And so, of course, they're going to like be a little more, I don't know, it's like Catholics are very superstitious, right? That they're like, oh, that's really bad. So, I don't know. I just have interesting feelings about that.
Yeah. I also believe I saw some at the Scout-O-Rama convention. But
hey, that's kind of like, if Lucky Magic, like, Lucky Rabbits, I was like, what am I trying to say? Lucky Rabbit's feet are really, like, if you're buying them for a lucky charm, I think that might be a little bit more luck than you really need to, like, have an animal sacrificed for it in a specific ritualistic way on a full moon. Dear Boy Scout, I think that might be a little bit more than you're bargaining for. That's all.
There are lots of, like, folk stories about lucky rabbit's feet being, like, monkey paws.
Yeah.
Where they, like, bring you luck, but then people are always after you to take it. And so that's the cost is you have people that are.
That's what I mean is like, well, and that is like, there are all sorts of things, that directly correlates to other things that are like with closed practice portions of like voodooism or voodoo that they're trying to protect because of like how dangerous it can be for people to steal them from you. Like that is absolutely a true thing. There are certain like dressing parts of the culture that straight up they'll be like, do not take a picture of that. If you take a picture and post it on Facebook, you will die. That's what happened to XYZ in Florida. Like that's – so it just is like y'all white people don't even know what you're doing and you're putting yourself in danger to do it. So –
now onto the more gruesome charm.
Oh, okay.
The one that kind of merged with the lucky rabbit foot as it got appropriated, the hand of glory. There is some folkloric intersection between the rabbit foot and the hand of glory, particular the thing involving criminals. Like in a lot of European folk magic, criminals were magic.
Yeah.
This seemed to be, you know, there's like...
Well, because it's the devil acting through them, right?
No, I don't even think it's that. I think it has to do with justice. Like it's specifically almost always criminals that have been brought to justice or killed. So I think it's that divine retribution touched them. And that divinity becomes secondhand.
No, maybe, but I don't... That's not... You're not cutting off someone's hand to have divine, like... interference. That's not what you're doing that for. It's not etheric.
Like people would like line up and they would pay the executioner to like
be it first.
Get it. For
that's
them.
What I mean. Like that is not over some fucking thing that God gave you. God wasn't like, I have blessed this hand. That's not what they're going after. That's not the kind of magic that sits in that hand.
Mm.
They should have consulted me before cutting them off.
This is all just a theory, though, like this intersection. Yeah. There are some folklorists who subscribe to this theory and some that don't. Some things just kind of intersect because they're intuitive. The hand of glory, though, absolutely gnarly. I'll be brief because we'll probably do a whole episode on corpse magic.
Yeah.
Like there was a whole other practice where you, after you hung somebody, you could pay the executioner to slice open that person's belly or wrists and have them bleed on you so that it would cure your diseases. Like fucking gnarly stuff with corpse magic.
That's
I don't know
actually,
how we do what,
like,
a reading for that on the show, but.
I was going to make a joke and be like, hey, you know, I have that new neurologist. So I'm just going to be like, ayo, what do you think about that blood magic, though? And then you ruined it by being like, well, how would you do that reading? And I was like, I wouldn't. That would not happen.
Maybe I will sacrifice some blood. I'll just like, drop.
No, like you don't just use your magic and blood and think it's going to be fine. That is not how that works at all.
Fine.
Jesus.
Elle won't let me do blood magic.
Yeah. Hey, anyone on here is like, yeah, let's just do like a blood bond.
You're just like those old farts on the Magic Council. Won't let anybody do blood magic or necromancy.
Yeah, I won't. If you ask me, I'm going to go ahead and say no to both.
A hand of glory is a magical charm acquired from a corpse of a condemned criminal. After the criminal hangs, the hand would be severed, dried, or pickled, or have the fat rendered from it. Either that or the hand would be transformed, the hand itself would be transformed into a candle.
I was going to say they would probably make it into a candle. That's some shit that I would take and that I would put next to my cursed water. And all of my clients, my shitty male clients, would be like, what's that? And I'd be like, that's the hand of a criminal. It would be really good. That's terrifying.
It's very terrifying. So, like, the fingers of the hand would become each an individual, like, candle.
Have you seen my fuck you candle? Because I have a hand like this that's cast like that. That's a candle.
Yeah, that's a hand of – that would be like a hand of glory.
It is like a hand of glory, but it's
– but it's just regular. Yeah. Wax, not the rendered fat from the hand of a criminal.
I don't think it is now.
But it has several magical properties. There are some accounts that say you also need to use the dead man's hair as the wick for the candle.
Fuck.
A hand of glory had several magical properties. Lighting the candle would render motionless anyone caught within the glow.
I don't think that's true.
I don't know. Got a hand of glory? We can test it.
I mean, I kind of do. It's not the OG one.
Yeah. If you use the hair of the dead man, it'll only provide light to whomever is holding the hand of glory. So it's like a flashlight only you can see, I guess. It lets you see in the dark.
Yeah, like an invisibility cloak,
kind of. Kind of, yeah. But more like it gives you cat eyes, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was also said to open any lock for the holder. I think part of that is the association with criminals. Like if they could...
Yeah, pick a lock.
You know, their criminal skills pass to you.
Mm-hmm. Having to be a criminal.
Yeah. Oh, and the candle flame can only be put out with milk.
Otherwise, you ruin it. Yeah, you don't want to put it out with water.
See, I thought – so I put a space here because I thought you were going to be like, milk? That's weird. But you were like, no, that tracks.
Well, so when you're doing candle magic, you know, you're not ever supposed to blow the candle out. You're supposed to snuff it out. Also, like – so the idea with that is using another element to kill the element of fire is bad. So if you can't blow it out, they don't want you to snuff it out. Putting it out with milk, milk in a lot of folk traditions is a way to nourish spirits. And so that act of like putting it out with milk would be to replenish the energy that has been taken from it in that moment, as well as to honor the flame that is bringing you power. So that makes a lot of sense.
There is currently a hand of glory on display in the Whitby Museum in North Yorkshire.
Oh, I want to see
it. It includes an 1823 text that describes the spell required to activate or earn the power of the hand of glory.
Uh-huh.
It reads thusly. It must be cut from the body of a criminal on the gibbet, pickled in salt and the urine of the man, woman, dog, horse, and mare. Smoked with herbs and hay for a month. Hung on an oak tree for 3 nights running. Then laid at a crossroads. then hung on a church door for one night while the maker keeps watch in the porch. And if it be that no fear hath driven you forth from the porch, then the hand be true one, and it be yours.
Yeah, see, that is not the protection of God. That is not what that is. There's no divinity that you're accessing to get that shit. Sitting on a porch and testing yourself to see if you are afraid with the hand of a criminal is like, is the devil going to protect you enough that God can't scare you from his property? That's what the question is.
Okay.
That's fucked. Man.
Yeah, we'll probably do an episode on corpse magic. Maybe that'll be for Halloween. We'll do corpse magic.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't even know how we do that. Maybe we'll go witness an autopsy. You can just sit and watch autopsies.
Yeah, maybe you can do that.
Or not autopsies. Yes, autopsies. You wouldn't come do it?
No, fuck that. I don't need to see that. My brain is constantly offering like secondary imaging to me all the fucking time. And I try not to feed it things like that to show me. Mm. Don't like that.
Okay.
Is that weird?
I don't know.
I'm just a psychic.
I don't know. It's just really hard because, like, I'd be like, well, I could acquire human bones. That's not hard to do. But also, like, I don't like where most of these human bones are sourced from.
Yeah.
So, no.
Yeah.
Some baby teeth, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how to figure that one out.
I think we've got time.
Yeah. The next charm I'd like to discuss is the phylactery. I've heard the term used in fantasy before. It's a magical box or a vial or a tubular container that contains a magical charm or scroll inside. In the Dragon Age games, a phylactery contains the blood of a mage and could be used to track them down if they were to go rogue. In Dragon Age, if you are magic, you are basically like sentenced to be confined in the mage tower because mages can be possessed by demons.
Oh, shit.
And so to prevent mages from getting possessed by demons and using magic to kill people, they basically put them in magic asylum. It's like a magic academy, and you're never allowed to leave. And if you leave, then they use your phylactery to track you down. Dragon Age is great. Anyway, in truth, a phylactery is a Greek term for a Jewish practice called tefillin. I hope I said that right. T-E-F-F-I-L-I-N. And they are small boxes affixed by straps and worn on the forehead and arms. And inside the boxes are verses from the Torah, the Jewish holy text. To outsiders, this sometimes seems like a magical amulet or a lucky charm.
Amulet. That's from Let's Get Haunted. They were talking about amulets. And Nat was like, amulet. And they literally made pens that are just like an egg and says the magical amulet on it.
Really, all these tefillin boxes are, they're reminders of God's intervention during the Exodus from Egypt. Some scholars believe that they have taken on some non-orthodox apotropaic qualities.
Mm-hmm.
You remember, apotropaic magic is magic that wards away.
I would assume that most charms would be apotropaic in nature.
Apotropaic magic, very popular when it comes to charms.
Yeah.
And while they serve as reminders to be faithful, that can be extrapolated by some to mean that they ward off evil thoughts and therefore evil things. Some Jewish texts say that they have the power to destroy demons. Part of the misconception that these are magical good luck amulets or enchanted spells in a box might be attributed to other religious traditions having such charms, and so their understanding of charms is assigned to these phylacteries or tefillin boxes.
Hmm.
Just like also like a sprig of anti-Semitism.
Jewish
people are like evil sorcerers. Just that also.
Honestly, if there was like one religion that I would be like, word, it would be Judaism. And I'm like deeply confused. Like when you study like the mystical side of like Judaism and the Torah. Like when you just start getting into it, it's just pretty much like, hey, we don't actually believe in heaven or hell. You should just be good because that's what you should do. And it's super wild to me that people have issues with that. Like, anyway.
When you start looking at the mystical side of Mormonism, it's all a bunch of Victorian era flim-flam.
It is, yes. Well, that's what I mean is, like, if we're going to talk about different things that we're like, well, I'm not sure that that's really, like, the people we should be supporting. I have found, like, because a lot of magic is based in Judaism, and I have, like, one of my mentors is Jewish. And so I've gone to her and learned a lot of things about, like, using, what is it called? I can't remember at this exact moment. Using certain approaches, like through Judaism, in how you do mediumship to like access it more easily. Kabbalistic mediumship. I've taken like courses in that. And when you start looking at the Kabbalah and you start like just really digging into it and looking at the Tree of Life and looking at like the Tree of Life with the tarot and everything, it's just like really beautiful. If you're anti-Semitic, like, fuck you. So there's that.
Next. I'd like to talk about horseshoes, which are prominently featured in Lucky Charm syrup.
Yeah.
Hearts and stars and horseshoes, clovers and balloons, pots of gold and rainbows and the red balloons. I will do that several times as we go through. My mom actually went hard for the horseshoe.
Of course.
Like superstition.
Of course.
But like why? Well, horseshoes are made out of iron, which is said to ward off demons.
Fairies.
Why does it ward off demons? Because it wards off fairies. And then Christianization happened.
And so demons. Okay.
Yeah. Iron being a sort of like sacred metal.
Yeah.
Also, horseshoes are held in place by 7 nails, which is considered a lucky number.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
The numerology of 7 is lucky.
It's prime.
Oh my God, I'm dead. It's prime. Okay. That's what makes it lucky, is that it's a prime number.
That's
like
why
13.
That's why I think it's lucky. 13 is also prime.
I know. That's right? What I said. Yeah.
All the magic numbers are prime.
1 is a prime number. 3 is my lucky number.
3 is a magic number.
Yeah.
There's literally a whole Schoolhouse Rock song about it.
Well, I mean, actually, if you like look at numerology and specifically like a kind of sacred numerology that I'm in, 3, 6, and 9 make up the universe. So 3 is the magic number.
Back to horseshoes. But also, there's a legend associated with horseshoes.
Okay.
That I will recount.
Yes.
So this is kind of like a Christian twist on the horseshoe thing that existed as part of a carryover from like Irish and Celtic mythology and belief. So a 10th century saint named Dunstan became the Archbishop of Canterbury. But before that, he worked as a blacksmith. The legend recounts that one day, the devil himself walked into Dunstan's blacksmith shop and asked him to put shoes on his horse.
I thought you were going to say that he like just threw his hoof up on the counter and was like, shoe me up.
Yeah. Shoe me up, partner.
Yeah.
Dunstan pretended not to recognize him. He's like, oh.
The devil.
Oh, sorry. Mr. Lucifer Satan, I've never heard of you.
I have no idea who you are.
Are you famous or something?
Your red skin is dazzling.
That's a weird hat. Those are horns.
Nice.
Nice, dude. So he agreed to shoe his horse. But rather than nailing the shoe to the horse's hoof, the devil kicked up his feet and was like napping in a chair waiting for, you know, his horse to be shooed. And Dunstan sneaked over while the devil was sleeping
and shooed
the devil instead. This causing him great pain and anguish because it's iron and 7 nails.
Yeah.
So the devil demanded that Dunstan remove the shoe and said that he would do anything if Dunstan would just remove the horseshoe. And he extracted a promise from the devil that he would never enter a household with a horseshoe nailed to the door.
Oh, okay. I sold used horseshoes at my shop.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Who used them?
I just bought them, like, from a company that they were just old iron, like, just kind of rusted. There might be some, like, literally right over there. Like, oh. In that, there's probably horseshoes. They're just, like, I think the idea of it is, like, it's an authentic horseshoe instead of it being, like, a brand new one. And if you're using it for magic, that's, like, a more important thing. Mm. So.
Now, there's some debate about how you should nail the horseshoe. Elle, do you nail your horseshoe with the points facing up or the points facing down?
I have not ever utilized the horseshoe as a lucky charm, so I have not had a strong opinion about it. I would literally look it up. People would ask, and I would look it up, and I'd be like, well, if this way, then this. But I don't remember what the meanings are.
So some say you should nail it with the points facing up or mm-hmm. with the points facing down so that the luck will pour out of the horseshoe over the people entering the house. Others say
you
have the points facing up so that all the luck stays inside. If you turn upside down, the luck will run out. My mother believed in the latter, and holy shit, was I paranoid about holding a horseshoe upside down.
Yeah.
She would be like, hey, don't do that. All the luck will run out. And so I was conditioned to hold horseshoes facing up. To this day, when I grab horseshoes, I do not hold them facing down.
I have never grabbed a horseshoe casually. Not ever. Not one time in my life have I been like, horseshoe, which way should I hold this? Like,
oh, the luck will run out. Yeah. Don't do this.
And your mother's life is totally based upon luck at this point, so that's fair.
There's also a specific horseshoe tradition. The flag of Rutland, England, which is like England's smallest, like, historic county.
Okay.
Their flag consists of a golden horseshoe laid over a field of scattered acorns. This refers to an ancient tradition in which every noble visiting Oakham, Rutland's county town, presents a horseshoe to the lord of the manor, which is then nailed to the wall of Oakham Castle. Over the centuries, the castle has amassed a ridiculous collection of horseshoes, the oldest of which date to the 15th century.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
They probably shipped them to me and I sold them for $10.
They're like, the wall's falling apart because the horseshoes make it too heavy.
Yeah. You gotta sell some. Sell some of these.
Yeah. They were trying to do what I did with my key.
We haven't even offered. We don't even know. What if we just, like, end up with $500 on Venmo and you're like, oh. I guess I gotta ship my key. You can't just ship it. I haven't done anything to it yet. We have to do some magic on it.
It's somebody who's like, that's my fucking key. A magpie stole it from me.
That's great. $500. The magpie gave it to us. I don't know what to tell you.
The next charm is stars. Hearts and stars, horseshoes, clovers, and blue moons, pots of gold, the rainbow, and the red balloons. Obviously, stars are related to astrology, the heavens, divine providence, and having a star charm can relate to those things. There is a specific star charm that is used by farmers to bring good luck in the U.S. in particular. Barn stars.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Pennsylvania Dutch from the Meomancy episode? Mm-hmm. The ones who do the Groundhog Day ritual?
I was just thinking about how fucking weird that was. Just yeah. Barely. I was like, yeah, that was weird.
Oh my god, they're fucking like names.
I know. The Stormbringer.
Stormcaller, yeah. Well, while another name for the Barn Star is the Pennsylvania Star because of the immigrants who started the tradition, the Pennsylvania Dutch. Similar to the horseshoe, it's a five-pointed star, sometimes inside of a circle, painted or mounted to a barn. You see it on houses too, but mostly it's on barns. The original purpose of the Barn Star was to serve as a builder's mark, but it would later take on magical properties and beliefs. Adorning structures with these star-shaped ornaments grew in popularity after the Civil War. It was a sign that the structure was built by a true craftsman and built to last, so they spread beyond Pennsylvania. They were affixed to factories, mills, all kinds of buildings. But why a star? And you might think it has something to do with astrology, but no. It actually has to do with the building process. In masonry, a star-shaped anchor plate is used for structural reinforcement. It was like 19th century, like, technology. Buildings without these barn stars anchoring them tended to tilt, while the reinforced buildings did not. Barns aren't masonry, but the sign But the star there is a sign that the builder knew their stuff. They knew about this, like, new technology that stops buildings from crumbling.
Oh, okay.
Cool. So, yeah, a little more practical. There's also barn star is a colloquial term for somebody or something that, like, holds down a community or, like, reinforces the structure of a community.
I'm a barn star in many communities, and I am not sure I signed up for that task.
Yeah.
You too.
Barn stars are also, like, awards on the internet that sometimes get given out to people in, like, wiki communities, like, people who are particularly good at, like, filling out, like, wiki entries and stuff like that. You get, like, a barn star for, I don't know, like, Dark Souls lore or, like, whatever. But there's some controversial barn stars.
I was going to say, what are you going to tell us the fun ones?
For people who post particularly good pornography on places like Tumblr. Mm-hmm. They get, like, sexy barn stars that have, like, penises on them and stuff.
Like, do they hang them over their barns?
Awards. I hope so. I hope so. On the magical side, barn stars have blended with the Pennsylvania Dutch tradition of hex signs, sometimes called stars in circles, because that's kind of what they are. And these were a kind of folk art that were used to adorn buildings as lucky talismans. Not all of them were stars, though. Some featured compasses, flower petals, hearts, or birds, hearts, stars, and horseshoes, clovers, and balloons. Lots of gold, rainbow, and there were balloons. Different hex signs can also like apply different magical properties to the building. Compass roses, for example, guide people to the building. Of course, there are some who don't believe these had any magical properties or belief at all, and that they were in fact just folk art. The word hex might have been a mispronunciation for the word six, because specifically hex signs, the stars had six points.
Yeah.
And like the compass rose has 6 points. In any case, hex signs are a popular souvenir item to visitors to Pennsylvania. So you can get like a little hex sign charm that you can
have. Yeah, that's fun.
And now let's do some charm casting. Elle, can you tell me what you have and what they mean and how you plan to cast them? Do you need to retrieve them?
Yeah, I think we need a minute to get set up for that process.
Okay. All right. Elle has prepared a Ouija board casting cloth and various charms. And we'll definitely get some pictures for the Mancy Instagram, as well as maybe a video of the throw. So that you can see that on the Mancy podcast TikTok as well. Mm-hmm. Elle, do you want to describe your various charms and what they might mean?
Yeah. So I have my key. It's like a antique key.
Skeleton key.
It's a skeleton key. It's anointed with road opening oil. I have a poker chip from Lilydale that is the inspiration stump, which is where they deliver medium messages from in Lilydale that I have to help with my psychic stuff. I have a guitar pick that says, I love you so much, that is from Austin, Texas, when I visited my brother. You know the mural, the street mural that's I love you so much?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what that is. I have another guitar pick that RJ got for me maybe the first time we went to Fish Lake, maybe the second time we went to Fish Lake when we visited Pando.
Yeah.
So I have my Pando guitar pick. I have a little magnet from Sabrina Bename that says, today is a good day to wake up and be great. It was gifted to me when I went and saw Sabrina Bename for my birthday in 2019, and it was in my store. And then when the store closed, because it was on our, like, register, we had it on the, like a little button on the register, I took it off and put it in my purse.
For those who don't know, Sabrina is a poet.
Yeah, Sabrina Bename is a poet. She's a, yeah, really good poet. Then I have this woman figure, Reen, that says, well-behaved women don't make history, which is just, I mean, it's pretty obvious for who I am. I have a fortune cookie.
Fortune cookie strip.
Begin, the rest is easy. And this was from when I was trying to open my store. I have a half dollar that I got from winning a blackjack hand. I have a poker chip from the Peppermill Wendover Casino that is for 50 cents. That was also won from a blackjack hand.
Yeah, you really only get those when you get a blackjack.
Yeah, so I save them from when I get blackjacks and I keep them as charms. I have like an entire, you know, my like jar of them. I just have a jar of them. I have a couple of, like, leaves of sage that I collected when RJ and I, like, went out on an adventure last summer to, like, find some spring water. And then I have two $2 bills. One is from the store that people left as a donation, and the other one was gifted to me by a person that I no longer speak to as a token of appreciation and luck from his grandmother.
Okay.
So
I believe you just gather all the things and yeet them onto the cloth.
I guess I should take a picture of all of the...
Some people will use a jar or something.
I'm kind of wondering if I want to do that.
We can use the singing bowl.
Oh, I should say all of these charms are my everyday charms that live in my wallet. Like, I literally just opened my wallet and was like, I have these. We do have questions. Okay.
Oh, you got one?
Yeah.
Okay, got a picture?
You really take the good pictures. I'm sorry, friend.
Yeah, I'm not a very good photographer.
Okay, so I'm going to just stand up and cast these. Do you want to stand over here?
Yeah, and I will take a video. Bring my microphone up.
Okay.
And you're leaving the paper on the...
I think I'm going to throw these... I'm going to throw, like, the papers after so they don't get damaged.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to do a charm casting for Enon. And he wants to know, how do I break my current string of bad luck? So let's see what the charms have to say about that. And then we're going to, I don't know, like sprinkle these?
You missed your sprig of sage.
Okay. Let's get these, like.
All right.
Okay. I'll take a picture of the casting. And we'll see what we ended up with.
Okay.
Okay, so... I'm sorry, it's just going to take me a minute. Okay. I think I'm ready. So we have like a really interesting kind of layout with the inspiration stump upright at the top and then the Fish Lake guitar pick upright at the top or at the bottom. And so it feels a little bit like there's like this delineation. There's like a plan. There's like a... like a path going forward. Also, it's like an arrow, like how the charms ended up being thrown looks like an arrow. And so it's just this kind of like forward momentum, it feels like. We got the half dollar heads up. Today is a good day to wake up and be great attached to the key. Right by that with the well-behaved women don't make history charm kind of like sitting together. So it's this kind of like green light path ahead kind of go with it. The I love you so much guitar pick is face down, which tells me that like it's not about love. It's not about like just doing the right things or necessarily being the right person so much as just not losing your momentum, just knowing that like there's a path forward and you need to follow it. Also, then we have the begin, the rest is easy, and that is kind of like up. So it's just this kind of idea of like pushing ahead and moving forward with that momentum.
Cool.
Do you want to do another? Or not?
We're gonna have plenty, I think.
Okay.
We're gonna have plenty to do. Do you want to do another?
I just have like.
You want to do one for you?
Yeah, I guess I could do one for me. That'd be good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see what these charms say for you. Oh, we've got traffic in the office.
Oh, we're going to put you. I guess, yeah, I'm just going to do like a general throw for me.
Okay. General throw. Off the table.
The I love you so much guitar pick is off the table, which feels like Austin is off the table. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Austin, the place.
Like moving to
off
Austin.
Off the table. Yeah. Can't do that.
I mean, Texas is particularly bad right now.
Yeah, we did have. Yeah. The Lilydale Poker chip with the inspiration stump is face down. The well-behaved women rarely make history is face down. The key and the magnet have found their way to each other again, and Fish Lake is upright. I mean,
that's completely unsurprising.
What? How do magnets work?
Fucking magnets. How do they work?
Yes, magnets. How do they work? So I would say, like, maybe for me it's like a message of just kind of getting through it, like not focusing on other things, not focusing on what happens next, what comes next, but just thinking about all the things that need my attention right here, right now, and just doing that, I would say. It smells like soup in here now.
Yeah, I think somebody made soup in the office. Hit us up on Patreon and Elle will do a reading for you on the show using whatever divination method we're covering. If you like my writing, you can find books at rjwalkerpoet.com.
If you want to get a reading from me, you can find me on Etsy. And Etsy has, like, slightly shadow banned me. So, like, please go buy readings from me on Etsy.
Yeah, there was like, a protest happening on Etsy.
There's a protest that I participated in.
And they shadow banned all the people that protested.
I don't know if that's true. I do know that since I participated for one day in the protest, I have not gotten hardly any readings. So, yeah, that'd be really great if you guys wanted to get readings from me.
Yeah, and that's Laurels of Lux
on Etsy. You can also find me on my website, laurelsoflux.com. And, you know, Etsy doesn't take a cut from me if you just book on there and pay me through Venmo. So I'm happy to do that as well.
Music was provided by Hayden Fulker, Miu, and Scott Buckley.